Chapter 47 Lonely Hearts Killers. There's a Laurel and Hardy movie, which still gets welcome showings on TV, in which Oliver answers an advert by a widow who wants a husband. The widow turns out to be a homicidal maniac who spends the rest of the film trying to destroy the dynamic duo. The film was based on one of the most infamous and unpleasant of all Lonely Hearts killers, Belle Brynhilde Pulsetta Sorensen Gunness. For unlike other Lonely Hearts killers, such as George Joseph Smith and Raymond Fernandez, she did not restrict her activities to strangers. She murdered her own foster daughter, and she may have ended by murdering her own children. Belle Pulsetta was born in Norway in 1859. Her father was a travelling conjurer, and she took part in the shows, dancing on a tightrope. When Belle was in her teens, they retired to a small farm. Belle found the life too quiet, and so she emigrated to the United States. There she married a Swede named Albert Sorensen. It would be interesting to know what happened to this marriage, for it was obviously the key to Belle's future career. If it had been happy, Belle Sorensen would never have become a murderess. Obviously it was not happy, for Sorensen died after 2 years, apparently of a heart attack. He and Belle were living in Chicago at the time, and his relatives demanded an exhumation, asserting that he had been poisoned. But the exhumation never took place, and Belle moved out to Austin, Illinois, with $8,500 she had collected from Sorensen's insurance. In Austin, her home was burned to the ground. The insurance company suspected fraud, but there was no proof, and they paid up. Belle moved back to Chicago. It seemed to her that she'd discovered the ideal way of making a living. She bought a confectionery store, and, after a while, this also burned down. Again, the insurance company paid up. Now, Belle purchased a farm near LaPorte, Indiana, and married again, this time to Peter Gunness, a jolly, good-natured man, much liked by his neighbours. By now, Belle herself had ceased to be the fairy-like creature who danced on a tightrope. She weighed over 200 pounds. She was muscular and had the battered face of a Norwegian peasant woman. The evidence suggests that Belle was a highly sexed woman. She probably married Peter Gunness for sex and then found that she couldn't tolerate him as a partner. In 1904, Peter died of a broken skull. He'd been sitting underneath a high shelf, Belle explained, and a heavy sausage grinder had fallen upon his head. Fortunately for the widow, his life was insured for $4,000. Belle now had three small children, one apparently by Gunness and an adopted daughter of 14, Jenny Olsen. One day, Jenny disappeared. Belle accounted for her absence by explaining that she'd gone to Los Angeles to complete her education. In the meantime, a number of hired men came and went, including, in 1906, a man called Ray Lamphere, who became the hired man and also Belle's lover. Photographs give him the look of a startled bush baby. It seems clear that their relationship was based upon dominance, her dominance. At all events, unlike most of her associations, it lasted. Even so, at about this time, Belle began to advertise in matrimonial journals for a husband. Comely widow who owns a large farm in one of the finest districts of LaPorte County, Indiana, desires to make acquaintance of a gentleman equally well provided with a view to joining fortunes. No replies by letter considered unless sender is willing to follow answer with personal visit. Another advertisement ended, "Triflers need not apply." One of the non-triflers who applied was named George Anderson. On reaching the farm, he woke up in the middle of the night and found Belle standing over him, holding a candle with a most peculiar look in her eye. He yelled out in alarm, and she hurried from the room. An instinct of self-preservation made Anderson get dressed and leave. Next, in May 1907, an elderly widower named Orla Bunsberg of Iowa, Wisconsin, answered Belle's latest advertisement. He called on her without telling his two sons where he intended to go. He also neglected to tell them that he had negotiated the sale of a mortgage at the LaPorte Savings Bank. In December 1907, Andrew Hagelein, a bachelor from Aberdeen, South Dakota, set out to see Mrs. Gunness. He arrived in January 1908. At the end of 2 weeks, the hired man, Lamphere, was mad with jealousy. But he didn't have long to suffer. Hagelein drew $2,900 from the local bank, and shortly afterwards Belle put it into her own bank and also discharged several large bills. Hagelein was still alive at the time and apparently all ready to marry Belle. Then he vanished. Lamphere indiscreetly told a drinking companion, "Hegeline won't bother me no more." It was that remark that aroused local suspicion and made Bell feel that her luck might be running out. Hegeline's relatives were also making inquiries. On April the 28th, 1908, the farm went up in smoke. Sheriff Smutzer searched the charred ruins and found the charred bodies of three children, aged 11, 9 and 5, and also a headless female body. The rings on the fingers were Bell's, but the body seemed to be that of a much smaller woman than Bell, who weighed 280 pounds at the time of her death. Doubts about the identity of the body vanished when searchers located a jawbone in the ashes. Bell's dental plate was attached, and also a tooth to which the plate had been anchored. That seemed to settle it, except that a witness claimed to have seen Bell driving out to her farm with a woman on the afternoon before the fire. On the face of it, it looked like murder, and Lamphere was arrested and charged. He had left Bell's employ shortly after the disappearance of Andrew Hegeline. He had been seen near the farm on the night of the fire. Shortly afterwards, Asler Hegeline turned up looking for his brother. He told the sheriff of the matrimonial advertisement that had taken his brother to La Porte, and of a letter from Bell saying, "My heart beats in wild raptures for you. Come prepared to stay forever." The men searching the ashes found men's watches and other bones and human teeth. Asler Hegeline went out to the farm and wandered around. Looking into the hog pen, he had a sudden intuition. He pointed to a rubbish hole in the corner and asked the men to dig there, and within a few hours they had uncovered four bodies, one Andrew Hegeline's, another Jenny Olson's. In several cases, limbs had been amputated. Hegeline, it was revealed later, had died of strychnine poisoning. So had the woman whose headless body was found. The digging now revealed more bodies. Among them were two children, suggesting that one of the prospective husbands had arrived with his family. Eventually, the remains of 14 bodies were uncovered. Most of them were badly decomposed, many mutilated. A few were identified by relatives. Thomas Lindbow of Chicago had been Bell's hired man in 1905. Henry Gerhold of Scandinavia had arrived at the farm with $1,500. His watch was found near one of the bodies. Olof Svenerud of Christiana, Norway, subsequently of Chicago, was identified by his mother. The remains of John Moo, or Moe, were also tentatively identified. The others never were. Lamphere finally confessed to setting the farm on fire, but denied committing murder. He was sentenced to jail for arson and died of tuberculosis in December 1909. After his death, the Reverend E. A. Schnell, the prison minister, made public a confession in which Lamphere admitted chloroforming the Guinness children on the night of the fire and claiming that a woman with whom he was living at the time had helped him. He also said that he had helped Bell to bury one victim and had seen her chloroform another and kill a third with a hatchet. The American criminologist Melvin Reinhardt, in Sex Perversions and Sex Crimes, states definitely that Bell escaped and later spent some time in a mental hospital. So, did Bell murder her children and then get away? It seems possible. The parent of a school friend of the Gunners' children reported one as saying, "My mama killed my papa. She hit him with a cleaver." That would be Peter Gunness. The alternative view, that Lamphere chloroformed all the Gunness family before he set fire to the house, sounds incredible. He might murder Bell in a fit of jealousy, but his photographs hardly suggest a man who would also kill children. Besides, he was, by his own admission, living with another woman at the time of the fire. So, in that case, would he keep the secret of Bell's escape after his arrest? What is known of Bell Gunness suggests that he would. She was, like so many murderesses, a woman of very high dominance, and therefore, to maintain an emotional and physical balance, needed a high dominance male. Her first husband, Albert Sorensen, failed to satisfy her, and she probably poisoned him. Murderers seldom change their poison, so it was almost certainly strychnine. The big, good-natured farmer, Peter Gunness, must have seemed a suitable sexual partner, but good nature is precisely what a very high dominance woman finds boring. She needs a strong, slightly sadistic sex partner. Various writers have speculated on what caused Bell to commit murder. Reinhardt assumes she was probably a sadist. This is doubtful. At least there's no evidence to suggest it. What is fairly certain is that she was the female equivalent of a sex maniac. If she had been fortunate enough to find the right high-dominance male at the beginning of her career, she would probably have been a normal housewife. Lack of sex turned her sour and mean. She chose males for her victims for the same reason that her Chicago contemporary, H.H. Holmes, chose females, because she had sex on her mind all the time. It's fairly certain that she slept with all the hired men and all the prospective husbands, and then, like a female spider, she killed them. The kind of man she wanted, a ruthless, slightly cruel Casanova, usually doesn't answer matrimonial advertisements unless he's hoping to gain financially by it. But the formidable Belle had a certain attachment to Lamphere because she dominated him so completely. This is clear from their relationship. He shared her bed when she was alone and moved out when a husband turned up, even though he was jealous of the husbands. So why did he move out after Hagelein's murder, when he had been so jealous of Hagelein? It could have been because Belle threw him out. But would she be so indiscreet as to dismiss a lover who knew so much about her? What seems more likely is that she planned the fire and her disappearance well in advance, realizing that the reckoning was bound to come soon. She sent her lover away as part of the general plan. On the night of the fire, he returned to help her chloroform the children and decapitate the woman who had already been poisoned with strychnine. If the dead body was Belle's, then how did the strychnine get into her stomach? The plan was probably to join her later on, but he went to jail and died. This seems to be the likeliest explanation of the Belle Gunness mystery. But unless someone can produce evidence that she was alive after the fire, no one will ever know. The powerful sexual motif appears in all cases of Lonely Hearts killers, and is particularly clear in a case that took place in Mexico in 1958, one of the few cases in which the majority of the victims escaped alive. Between August and late September 1958, five women who were taking holidays in the area of Mexico City were beaten, raped, and robbed. The women were mostly over 40, all taking holidays on their own, perhaps hoping that a romantic Mexican might provide an exciting companion. On August the 23rd, a woman from Philadelphia met a tall, rather good-looking man who spoke perfect English. He told her that he was an American engineer who had lived in the area for years, and he offered to take her to a village where she could buy cheap but excellent local pottery. He called for her at a hotel and drove off. A few miles out of town, he pulled off the road and either forced or persuaded her to drink from a bottle. She blacked out. When she came to the next morning, she was naked, and she had been raped, beaten, and robbed. She reported the affair to the police, but refused to make any formal complaint, being afraid of the publicity. Then, 3 weeks later, on September the 13th, another American woman met the same man and went drinking with him. She also woke up naked on a bed in a cheap hotel, bruised all over, and her jewellery and money missing. 2 days later, a Canadian woman met the tall, blue-eyed man and agreed to go with him to see Indian dances. She drank from a bottle and woke up the following morning by the roadside, raped, beaten, and robbed. A New York girl who met with the same man 3 days later was luckier. He had taken her to a remote village and was starting to attack her when a group of men appeared, and she escaped. There were two more victims, both of whom died. Anne Carey was a middle-aged schoolteacher from Chicago who had retired to Mexico in 1955. She went out with the same tall stranger. When she was found the next morning by the roadside, she was unconscious and naked. She died on the way to hospital from a vicious beating. Her stomach was found to contain a large quantity of chloral hydrate, knockout drops. Her landlady described the man she left with as tall, blue-eyed, and with a cyst on his neck. The final victim was Mrs. Harriet Ann Hicks, a 52-year-old American, again on holiday in Mexico City. She was a well-to-do interior decorator, and when she was found on September the 23rd on the roadside near Puebla, she also had been partly unclothed, raped, and badly beaten. She had been robbed of about $900 in traveller's checks and of jewellery. She died on October the 3rd without regaining consciousness. By this time, however, the killer had made a mistake. He had allowed Mrs. Hicks to take two photographs of him. The head bellman in her hotel had taken the roll of film and still had the photographs. They showed a tall, good-looking man with close-cropped hair in his 40s. Prints of the photographs sent to Interpol identified the man as Robert J. Thompson, 49 years old, a wandering engineer, mechanic, aviator and mining prospector, with several charges of robbery and criminal assault still outstanding against him. Thompson had fled, but traveller's checks belonging to Mrs. Hicks, cashed in various Mexican towns, revealed that he was still in the country. His photograph was shown to all hotels, and in late October a desk clerk at a Mexico City hotel recognised him as he stood drinking in the bar and called the police. The victims who had escaped with their lives all identified him as the attacker. In November 1958, the Lonely Hearts rapist, robber and killer was sentenced to life imprisonment. In a case like this, the police are always left wondering, were these his only victims? Does a man suddenly start a career of assaulting women at the age of 49? This is another feature common to Lonely Hearts cases, that no one can ever be certain of the number of victims. There is, for example, the puzzling case of Dr. Colin Campbell, who died in the electric chair in New Jersey on April the 17th, 1930. Now, Dr. Campbell was a small, respectable-looking, grey-haired man who lived with his wife in an upper-class neighbourhood of Westfield, New Jersey. On the morning of February the 23rd, 1929, the smouldering body of a woman was found on a snow-covered road near Cranford, New Jersey. She had been shot through the top of the head with a .32 revolver. Petrol had been poured on the body. 1 year earlier, another woman's body had been found in similar circumstances in Morris County. It was identified as that of Margaret Brown, a governess from New York. Through newspaper publicity, the second body was discovered to be that of Mrs. Mildred Mowry of Greenville, Pennsylvania, who was in her early 40s. Neighbours said that Mrs. Mowry, a widow, had left in February 1928 to go to New York to marry a man named Campbell. From then on, the going was easy. A marriage certificate gave Richard Campbell's address at 3707 Yosemite Street, Baltimore, which did not exist. But at 3705 Yosemite Avenue, the residents knew of a Dr. Colin Campbell of Westfield, New Jersey. He was their landlord. Dr. Campbell seemed to be an unlikely murder suspect, a well-to-do, married man. But in his pockets, detectives found a .32 revolver. A check with police records revealed that Campbell had served time for forgery and embezzlement and had a penchant for keeping mistresses, often several at a time. He had contacted Mrs. Mowry through a matrimonial agency and married her when he discovered that her husband had left her a small fortune. But she clung to her money and made difficulties, which is why Campbell decided to kill her. The other murder, of Margaret Brown, remained unsolved, raising the question, was Mrs. Mowry the first? If not, how many more lonely women preceded her? There have been other spectacular Lonely Hearts cases since the end of World War II, but perhaps the most extraordinary of them involved the death of a mother and daughter, who may both have been mistresses of the killer. The daughter, Maria Domenech, had been a pretty 28-year-old social worker from New York. Her body, clad only in black panties, was found at the bottom of the cliffs of Moher on the west coast of Ireland on May the 24th, 1967. It took more than a week for the Irish police to identify her, with the aid of Interpol, and by that time her mother, 51-year-old widow Mrs. Virginia Domenech, had also vanished from her New York home. The trail led the police to Orly Airport in Paris, where Maria had prepared to fly to Ireland on the afternoon of May the 22nd in the company of a man. Careful detective work revealed that they had arrived in Dublin hours later, hired a car, driven across Ireland, and arrived at the cliffs at 5 in the morning. There he had knocked her unconscious, taken a large sum in traveller's cheques from her pocketbook, and thrown her to the beach below. He then caught a plane from Shannon back to Paris a few hours later. He thought the alibi was perfect, but when the police established his identity as Patrick Darcy, an Irish-American who had been having a tempestuous affair with Maria before she left America, as well as showing marked attention to her mother, he realised the gamble had failed. Darcy committed suicide in a motel room in Florida a few weeks after the murders. Virginia Domenech's body has never been found.